I imagine many of you opened your bulletin this morning and were surprised that there were no sermon notes in there. It's not that they weren't prepared, even printed. Bonnie had them ready, and then the events of this week transpired. Monday, Dan DePue came in to tell me that his mother, who lived to a ripe old age of 96, had passed away, and that he'd be going to Oregon to her funeral. Just a few days earlier, we had learned that Pastor Mark Roden had been in a bicycle accident and suffered a broken neck, and he was in the hospital, as was our own Joanne Askins, who had been diagnosed with leukemia just about 6 weeks ago. On Thursday morning, I went up to the hospital to see Joanne, and she was in a coma. Her son, David, and his sister, Annette, who had flown in from Dallas, Texas, were in the waiting room. And we were there for a few hours, and the decision was made to take Joanne off life support since she was technically brain dead. I had no more got home than the phone rang telling me that Mark Roden had also died as a result of his injuries. The next morning I came in and there was an email telling me that Ian Campbell, who had been a contributor to one of the books I edited, died suddenly at the age of 53. Now, this was just overwhelming. So I told Bonnie, I said, we'll save the sermon notes for next week. This week we're going to look at a passage in Philippians chapter 2, a sermon that I've titled, A Grief Observed. Most of you may recognize that that's the title of a book as well, a book written by C.S. Lewis under a pseudonym. When he published it, it was not authored by C.S. Lewis. He did not want people to know who wrote it. It is a book that deals with his grief over losing his wife, who died of cancer. And if you read the book, it's distressing. C.S. Lewis said, I never doubted the existence of God, but now I doubt his goodness. And it's a very transparent account of a grief that C.S. Lewis experienced and eventually triumphed over. I want you to look at this passage in Philippians chapter 2, beginning with verse 25, in which Paul tells us about one of his co-workers. If you read the book of Acts and many of the epistles of Paul, you'll find out he had many co-workers. Luke, the beloved physician, Barnabas, Silas, Timothy, Titus, Epaphroditus, Epaphras, Demas. He was constantly surrounding himself with co-laborers. And this occasion, he tells us about a man named Epaphroditus. He writes, but I thought it necessary to send back to you Epaphroditus, my brother and fellow worker and fellow soldier, who is also your messenger and minister to my need, because he was longing for you all and was distressed because you had heard that he was sick. For indeed, he was sick to the point of death. But God had mercy upon him, and not upon him only, but also upon me, lest I should have sorrow upon sorrow. Therefore, I have sent him all the more eagerly, in order that when you see him again, you may rejoice, and I may be less concerned about you. Therefore, receive him in the Lord with all joy, and hold men like him in high regard. Why? Because he came close to death for the work of Christ in risking his life, to complete what was deficient in your service to me. Epaphroditus is mentioned here. The name is derived from a Greek goddess, Epaphroditus. It's more than likely he was named after her as a child, but then was converted to the Christian faith. And he is mentioned here in four specific ways by the Apostle Paul. Notice he refers to him as a brother, not a physical brother, but a brother in the Lord. And this tells us about the intimacy in which Christians regard one another as brothers and sisters. Secondly, notice he says he was a co-worker, synergos, to work alongside of. And the work he did was as a minister that he will refer to him later, a minister to my need. Thirdly, he is called a fellow soldier, which implies the nature of the ministry is that of a soldier, dealing with hardship and burden and danger. In fact, you couldn't help but miss down later in verse 30 that Epaphroditus labors on behalf of the Apostle Paul, almost got him killed. Now, we do not know the nature of it, other than we thought that he was sick. Something happened to him. In the process of him trying to minister to the Apostle Paul, he exposed himself to danger and was ill to the point of death. And the Philippians had got word of the fact that their beloved brother had succumbed to some illness that was the result of his labors. They were arduous. And so he said, he is a fellow soldier and a minister to my need. That word minister, Matt, that's what it means, to aid and to assist. But the thing I want to point out to you here is the words that Paul uses to talk about Epaphroditus' own distress. Notice how he underscores this. He says that he was sick to the point of death, and that word got back to you, and that he was distressed over this. Now, A.T. Robinson, that noted Greek scholar, points out that the word distressed here could come from two sources. It could come from a word that means homesick, to be away from home and to miss it. And that Epaphroditus could very well have been homesick for his fellow brothers and sisters back in Philippi. But he also highlights that this word is only found one other time in the Greek New Testament. That is in Matthew's account of the Garden of Gethsemane, where we're told that Jesus began to become greatly distressed. And the word there means to be in dire circumstances mentally. It is a mental and an emotional thing. Now, this week, as I said, when we experience the loss of loved ones suddenly and unexpectedly, it is the mental anguish that oftentimes is the great burden to bear. That is what C.S. Lewis endured with the loss of his beloved wife. That's why he wrote the book, A Grief Observed. You know what's so interesting? When this book first came out, remember, it was written anonymously. No one knew who the author was. Lewis received dozens of copies from friends saying, this book may be of help to you. Imagine that. He got copies in the mail from people who were concerned because they could see it. I was telling Josh Walker and Mason DePew this morning that when I was a PhD student at Westminster, one of my favorite classes was a class taught by Moses Silva, an exegesis of Philippians. He later published a commentary on it, and it was a magnificent commentary, and it was one of the best classes I ever had. Not long after I had that class, our professor of Hebrew at the time was Ray Dillard. Ray was professor of Old Testament. He and Moses had entered Bob Jones University as freshmen and met as freshmen and went all the way through undergraduate school. Then they went to Westminster and went through seminary. Ray specialized in Old Testament. Moses specialized in New Testament. They were best of friends. And then suddenly, at the age of 47, Ray Dillard died riding his bicycle of a massive heart attack. This had a devastating effect upon Moses Silva. He was never the same after that. You could tell by his appearance, the look on his face, the way he conducted himself. He was sad. Paul speaks of having sorrow upon sorrow. Now, if you look at that expression, the Greek word lupeo, it can mean sad, but it more likely means to be distressed by grief. And Paul says, in a typical Hebraic way of thinking, he doubles something to underscore how terrible it is. You know that if you read your King James Bible, you'll oftentimes see Jesus using the words verily, verily. You know, it's kind of quaint. Verily, verily, or sometimes it's translated truly, truly. And it's the way the Hebrews had of emphasizing something that's important by doubling it. So when Jesus said, verily, verily, I say unto you, unless you're born again, he's saying this is of utmost importance. And so by doubling something, the Hebrews could add a point of exclamation. You know, in English, we do it by the tone. This is why you can't convey that in writing unless you use exclamation points. But oftentimes, the tone will tell a person who's listening to us what we're thinking and how seriously we take it. And so Paul talks about having this sorrow upon sorrow. Over what? Over the death of Epaphroditus. Now, this is in the same epistle that Paul says to die is to be with Christ. Doesn't he not say that? I would rather do that. Now, he knew that Epaphroditus had died. Well, that'd be all the better for Epaphroditus. He'd be in the presence of Jesus. But the loss that lingers. I often tell people when I conduct funerals, this will not be your last one. You will be in the presence of at least one more, perhaps in the coffin at the time. Because funerals are a way of reminding us of the brevity and the transitoriness of life. And in my capacity as a minister, it is the most difficult thing to do, is to do funerals. Especially the funerals of a person who was an unbeliever. That is extremely difficult. J. Vern McGee, you know, the radio Bible teacher, had that delightful way of saying, this is where the rubber meets the road. He once told an occasion in which a very wealthy rancher had died, and he was asked to do the funeral. But he said the man was a notorious womanizer, alcoholic, and not at all saintly in any way. And they wanted J. Vern McGee to do the funeral. And he was going to, what are you going to get up and say? You're going to give a eulogy about this man? About how happy he is now in the presence of the Lord? He said, I couldn't say things like that. So I had to tell them. And he preached from that text in Hebrews 9. It's appointed unto men to die and then to face the judgment. And he said, that is what has happened to this individual. The reality of facing God without a mediator, without a high priest, to be confronted with the holiness of God, it's a fearful thing to fall into the hands of the living God in that state. The comfort and consolation we took from this past week was Dan's mother, Pastor Mark Rodan, Joanne Askins, and Ian Campbell are all now celebrating their joyous reunion around the throne of the Lamb. That is Paul's comfort and consolation. But the point being, as I close, is that the loss of his co-worker would have grieved him. Paul was no stoic. The loss of loved ones. He tried to tell Timothy in his last letter before his own death the sad spectacle of one of his co-laborers forsaking him, having loved this present world, was Demas. Imagine a co-worker of the Apostle Paul becomes an apostate. We need to comfort one another with this. We do not grieve as others who grieve who have no hope, but grieve we nonetheless do. And sometimes the grief can be so overwhelming that we lose sight of the face of the Lord. May God grant us grace through this period to see more clearly our only comfort and hope and joy in knowing Christ and Him crucified. As the elders and deacons now would come forward, let us remember the Lord Jesus and the bread and the wine.